For centuries, Malian people have practiced a giving tradition, a daily practice that binds together communities and ensures care for the most vulnerable. They call it Dalma, and it's practiced across religious groups and regional boundaries throughout the country of more than 12 million people.
Dalma is just about a culture of giving, which is the main transaction that we use, and it's very different from changing or bartering or any commercial stuff. It's just simply giving.
Kumba Ture is an Ashoka Fellow and an educator with the Institute for Popular Education in Mali. She's also a collaborator with Other Worlds.
You give things that are material but also unmaterial. You use any occasion to do it. Yes, of course, there are big occasions like wedding, you know, birth, and so on. But even on regular days, you know, someone comes to see you at your house, and when they're leaving, you give them something.
Dalma can take the form of watching a neighbor's child while they're on an errand, giving food or money to a passing stranger, or offering a piece of jewelry. It's firmly based in a cultural expectation that people share what they have with the people around them. But Dalma is not a direct exchange, and there's no expectation that the recipient will return the favor. Rather, the giver knows that in some way or another, they will someday be a recipient as well. That's why it works, says Ture.
You do know that things come back in a way or another, but it doesn't have to come back from the person that you're giving to. Maybe someone else will be giving to you. Maybe it doesn't come back in your lifetime, and maybe it comes back in many other generations. Maybe it doesn't come back to you, but it comes back to someone in your community. It's really, I don't want to say giving to the universe or giving outside, but it goes out and you know that it stays. You participate in making life better for everyone and for yourself.
In Mali, the tradition of Dalma also serves as a social safety net, protecting the most vulnerable members of the population. At the same time, it reduces inequality, as those who earn more generally give more away.
If you are in countries, in, you know, not only Mali, I guess in West Africa, you could easily see that one person who's, for example, working can be supporting 20 other people easily, related to his or her family or not, or friends or neighbors. When you have, the fact that you have pushes you to be also sharing. It's just the way people live. It would be very difficult to just have a lot and accumulate more and more and not share with others, because then you become someone that is not, I would say, respected or not loved in many ways. And for yourself also, you become lonelier and less happy.
Mali is not the only country with a strong culture of giving. Gift-giving traditions can be found as far back in history as the Stone Age and are found in cultures around the world. Giving can be a part of religious obligations and charity. The Amish have a practice where members of a community band together to help their neighbors build a barn. Giving can also be a cultural phenomenon.
India has a pretty rich tradition of gifting.
Activist Shilpa Jain was part of a gift culture in the northern region of India.
In my part of the country, which is Rajasthan, in that region we have a tradition called Pyao. And what these are basically water vessels that people set up freely around the community for travelers or anyone who's walking by to get a drink of water. So in a day and age where, you know, to get water is like this trial of going into a store and buying it for a dollar and putting it in a plastic bottle and, you know, all the kind of violence and waste associated with that, it's a very simple tradition of ensuring that water would be provided for anybody and everybody free of cost. And it would be something that regular people would just put up outside of their homes, you know, in the streets, near temples, and they would be updated and cared for by the people themselves.
Jane worked with the grassroots organization Shikshantar for 10 years. The organization works to support community learning for a more just, balanced, and meaningful living. They rely on the generosity of community members to accomplish their goals.
What we did a lot with Shikshantar is we were, you know, we're a grassroots organization with a very minimal budget. And so early on, from the start, we were operating on the idea of gift. We would host, and we still do, host a number of workshops around the city, and we would ask the different tailors in our community to give us scraps of cloth, which we could use for making puppets. They had leftover cloth from their shop, and so they could sell it and make a little bit of money off of it, or they could gift it to us, and we would use it for workshops. We would ask families if they would open up their homes and allow us to host the workshop on their rooftops or in their small terraces or in their little courtyards or whatever space they might have. We would ask the carpenters if they would donate their waste pieces of wood, and, you know, the bicycle repair guys if they would donate the kind of busted up tire pieces, and we would make stamps and bags and all kinds of things out of those different materials.
For Shikshantar, creating a culture of giving is very different than relying on the charity of the members of their communities.
The difference is that it's not about top to bottom, which charity often involves, as though there's haves who have a lot who must give to those who don't have. And the idea is to try to distribute in a way that brings some people up. I think what gift economy is suggesting is that we all have something to give, and that distribution needs to happen for sure, but it needs to happen in a lot of different ways and through different angles. And there are things that people who don't may not have a lot of material wealth have in terms of knowledge, in terms of community, in terms of skills that can be very useful for people who may have more material wealth but who might be lacking in some of those things. So the whole concept is around reciprocity, and it's around movement of energy and flow as opposed to a simple kind of move from top to bottom.
Although there aren't hard numbers about who participates in gift economies, you can see them at work in almost any culture. It can take the form of bringing food to friends who have lost a loved one, passing along hand-me-down clothing, or be found in the free boxes around the country. Kumba Ture says it's more universal than we may think.
I think every community practices at one level or another this gift economy. It's not visible. I think most transactions, you know, between friends, between families, parents and children, and so on, are not based on exchange.
As communities in countries like Mali and India struggle to preserve ancient gift traditions in the face of a growing global culture of consumerism, people around the world are also building new gift economies every day. Websites like FreeCycle help people give away their unwanted items online. Alternative marketplaces where everything is free and bartering is discouraged have cropped up in more than 25 cities across the U.S. They're called really, really free markets. And open source software programs and websites like Wikipedia also spring from the principles of giving. Kumba Ture says that even though the gift economy may not be the dominant model, it's important to recognize its presence, no matter how big or small.
We need to recognize those places where giving is part of our life and present it and see it as a valuable model of living and not pretend that it doesn't exist or it's not helpful.
For Making Contact, I'm Rachel Wallace with the Other Worlds Collective.